As this week has passed, I've found myself to be somewhat frazzled the hecticness of the holidays and the fact that we had all of my grandkids together on Tuesday with the kids and such was a wonderful, wonderful thing. But I was just thinking about the services this morning, how nice and quiet and reverent that our day has been up to this point in time. And there are individuals who really don't like the style of worship, although it is, I think, a scriptural thing. The Apostle Paul said all things must be done decently and in order. But the reverence that has been shown today by the worship leaders and the time that we have spent together, especially when we contemplated the book of Isaiah chapter 53 and the time we spent around the Lord's table, the silent reflection, the opportunity to remember the Lord's death till He comes again. It's certainly a blessing to be here and to be able to quiet your mind just for a little while as you offer up these aspects of our worship to God. It is certainly a privilege that we have to be here today. I know that we are missing some of our number. It is the day of the holidays, but the good thing about that is, while some of our members go and visit their families, some of the families come here. And it's as a result of that that we have had visitors both last Sunday as well as it was today. We know one of the reasons that you're here is coming to visit family. We thank that you have taken the time to be with us today and spend some time together. We are certainly grateful for that. We had the reading at the beginning of our time together from Psalm 25, and it was a good reading. I appreciate it very much, the job that was done. I want to remind you again of a couple of verses that are contained in that. We're going to use that as a jumping off point in our lesson today as we titled it, At the Crossroads. You'll notice the image that is up on the board is one that certainly can be painted by the words of the Bible again and again when we talk about roads or paths that we are to take. Those who are serving God as they ought, taking acceptable pathways. Those who are not, pathways that lead to destruction. And we're going to discuss that a little bit. But it is an interesting thing as you look in both the Old and the New Testament, how many verses actually use that language to talk about basically what it is. It's the choices we make in life. What we decide to do with our life. How we decide to act, to obey or not to obey the decisions that we make. It certainly, each time we make a decision, we take a particular path that we could have taken another path if we had made a different decision. And so these are consequential. That's what life is. It's a series of choices. You've heard that before. And the Bible very clearly establishes that. Just note in Psalm 25, in the fourth and fifth verses, where the psalmist said, "Show me your ways, O Lord. Teach me your paths. Lead me in your truth and teach me, for you are the God of my salvation. On you I wait all the day." So you'll notice the desire that the psalmist here expresses to know the paths of God, the ways that God has established, because those ways are true. But understand this, whenever we make choices, the choices come, if they are the correct choices, because we have humbled ourselves. We have become selfless. Our desire, our determination is to do what God has us to do. The Apostle Paul referred to that in his letter to the Galatians when he said, "It is no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me." The things that Paul did in his life were not of his own making, not of his own deciding. It was because this is what Christ intended for him to do in his life and ministry from that point of his conversion to the point of his death, and something that he was faithful as a steward to do those things. So the humility that is needed is referred to in Psalm 25 and verse 9, where we're told that the humble he guides in justice, the humble he teaches his way. All the paths of the Lord are mercy and truth, and to such as keep his covenant and his testimonies. So when we talk about choices that we are to make, understand we have free will. We can do what we want to do. But there are always consequences to the decisions that we make. In order for us to make the right decisions that lead to the best consequences, the direction that we ought to go, we have to humble ourselves and make God's will our own will. But in order for us to illustrate this particular point, standing at the crossroads in our lives, the paths that we choose having life-changing effects, I want to read to you just a couple of quick passages of Scripture. You may follow along if you'd like or simply listen. The first one is in Joshua chapter 24, beginning in verse 15 of the text. Now, this was at the end of Joshua's life as the people were to stand and establish themselves as the people of God and obey Him. He warned them about these things. He said, "If it seems evil to you to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the river, or the gods of the Amorites in which land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." And so that's the choice. And you'll remember in verse 24 of the text, in the short term at least, because it was not something that they committed to continually, but in the short term, stirred by the words of Joshua, in verse 24 of the text, Israel answered him by saying, "The Lord our God we will serve, and His voice we will obey." And so that's what we're talking about in our lesson today. And there are so many passages which use the imagery of paths or roads or ways to indicate this. For example, in Jeremiah chapter 6, this was a time in which the prophet was declaring the word of the Lord when the people were rebellious. It was a very ungodly time. And the Lord said, through the words of Jeremiah, "Stand in the ways and see and ask for the old paths." I love that phrase, the old paths. The reason they were old is because they have always existed. They are always present because they are God's paths. The old paths, that's where the good way is. Walk in the old paths, where the good way is. Then you will find rest for your souls. But this is what the people said, "We will not walk in it." And so God said, "I set watchmen over you, saying, listen to the sound of the trumpet." But they said, "We will not listen." And again, you can make your decision. Are you going to walk in the old paths or not? And you decide, yes, we will, or no, we will not, just as the Israelites did here at the time of Jeremiah, but understand the consequences of taking a path that is away from God. It is stated again in that sixth chapter in Jeremiah, beginning in verse 18, the two verses that follow. He said, "Hear, you nations, know, O congregation, what is among them. Hear, O earth, behold, I will certainly bring calamity on this people, the fruit of their thoughts, because they've not heeded my words nor my law, but rejected it." He's going to deal with them. There are consequences to the paths that you take. Now, we understand this. I mean, you can illustrate it in such simple ways. I personally have a problem with navigation. I'm good at following directions. I can, but my wife, she's very different. You know, she'll go to one place and she'll say, there's a convenience store on the corner and you turn there. Well, that doesn't do any. I want to know the name of the street. And I want to know whether I turn left or right. And I want to know which direction it is. I've got to know all these things to navigate well. And I remember when I first moved to Fort Worth in the area, in Dallas area, I got to the south part of Fort Worth to do something and didn't have my maps go with me. That was what you used before you had the GPS or the phones. And didn't have my maps go with me. And so I saw a road that I thought was leading north and south that would get me back to the north side of town. And I took it, but while it had led north and south for a while, it had turned and was becoming east and west. And I got lost for a while as a result of it. I just didn't know where I was. But the consequence of not going the right way was about an hour's time lost. And perhaps you've done that as well. But in fact, I like GPSs and I like the phone, because even when I go to Josh and Rachel's now, I still put it in every single time just in case. And I just kind of look. I know how to get there, but I don't know what the best way to go is. And those things are helpful. But understand this, that there are consequences to bad choices that are made in the paths that we take. And it can be with navigation. It can be with career choices. It can be with educational choices. There are consequences to the paths that we take. And ultimately, there are spiritual consequences. That's the importance of our lesson today. And it is encapsulated in Matthew chapter 7. And I want to just kind of keep that before us. It's the well-known statement of Jesus in Matthew 7 and verse 13 when he talks about entering into the narrow gate. For wide is the gate, broad is the way that leads to destruction, and there are many go in by it. But narrow is the gate, and difficult is the way which leads to life, and there are few who find it. And so, the difficult way, that's the way that few take. The broad way is taken by the majority. So, what we're basically saying is, when you decide to take a path here on this earth, spiritually, most of the people are taking the wrong path. There are few that find the way to heaven because the path is a difficult and straight path to take. So let's just examine the two very quickly for a few moments. Let's talk about the difficult way that is stated in Matthew chapter 7 in verse 4 that we might call the highway to holiness. And it takes wisdom. It takes discernment for us to make that right choice. So you come to a fork in the road, as indicated in the illustration, and all right, so is there any indication as to which is the right path and which is the wrong path to take? And sometimes it can be difficult, but it certainly is not difficult spiritually to know the right way to go if you indeed have wisdom. We are told in Proverbs chapter 2, using the imagery of paths, he said, so that you may walk in the way of goodness and keep to the paths of righteousness, the upright will dwell in the land, the blameless will remain in it, the wicked, though, will be cut off from the earth, and the unfaithful be uprooted in it. So wisdom, making that right choice, knowing what it is that you're to do, making the correct applications, it's a very important thing. The prophecy of Isaiah in Isaiah 2 regarding the Messianic kingdom uses that same concept when he said, it will come to pass in the latter days, the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established on the top of the mountains, and shall be exalted among the nations and all, among the hills, above the hills, and all the nations shall flow into it. So the nations are going to come. All the nations. That doesn't indicate the majority, but rather there will be citizens from every nation, every land, every culture, every time, who will make that right choice. We're told many people shall come and say, come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, and he will teach us his ways. He will lead us in his paths. And out of Zion shall go forth the law, the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. So here it is. God's word teaches us that highway to holiness. So it takes wisdom, it takes knowledge, it takes discernment for us to go the right way. You can't just stumble upon it. But you know, when we talk about the broad way which leads to destruction in Matthew chapter 7 and verse 13, that is indeed that broad way is that way that that many stumble upon. You've heard the phrase looking for love but in all the wrong places. There are a lot of people who look for spiritual guidance but in all the wrong places. They look for spiritual worth in all the wrong places. They want to make something out of their life. They have some sense that there is something important that they are missing, but they go to all the wrong places to find that. And then others just stumble along going whatever way they want. All that their desire is. And it's not so much a willingness in any way, but rather a desire to just live my life the way I would live it. I've told you a number of times from this pulpit about the illustration of Theophilus. It's a very interesting cartoon, but it's so simple to note. Is that Theophilus is rowing as hard as he can upstream. Just rowing as hard as he can. But the boat of wickedness that goes by is full of individuals that are just coasting, just drifting down the river. And then the next panel shows the waterfall that is their destruction. And so you have to work at it to walk the right path, and so many are not willing to do that. We're told in Proverbs 13 and verse 5 that a righteous man, he hates lying, but a wicked man, he's loathsome. He comes to shame. Righteousness guards him whose way is blameless. The blameless way, the straight way, the righteous way. But wickedness overthrows the sinner. And I think it is important to note that men often mistakenly think that their way is the right way, is the proverb writer states in chapter 14 and verse 12, there's a way that seems right to a man, but the end thereof is the way of death. And again, illustrations might help in this regard. I remember that when Debbie and I were young and foolish, I think Josh was in the car seat early on, and we wanted to go home for Christmas. And there was a blizzard. And we still wanted to go home for Christmas. And we were called and told, don't come unless it's safe. And we still wanted to go home for Christmas. And so we set off in the blizzard. And we were in a valley, the Quail Valley near Tucumcari, New Mexico. And we thought, okay, we can get there. This is not too bad. It's a blizzard, but it's not too bad. And we got up on the cap rock where we were exposed to the blowing snow and had to turn around and come back because it was impossible to go. It just wasn't the way that we needed to go. And the way we turned down, the next day we went and they had managed to open up some of the roads and all. The way that we normally took as a shortcut never opened up until the snow melted. I mean, it was 6 feet deep. And I can just imagine us getting halfway down that road or a third of the way, because it was only a couple miles up to turn off to it. I couldn't even see the stripe on the road, but if I could have found that turnoff, if we had met, we might have made a wrong decision. But seemed like the thing to do, but it wasn't the thing to do. And sometimes things that seem right are not. And we need to determine what is right by determining what God's will is. And so with that in mind, there are a couple of applications I want to make. And I want to use that image of a crossroads in all of these, because that's what a decision is. We make a decision. So we preach the gospel every time we have an opportunity to come. And the primary purpose of that, as we come together, we have to say is evangelistic. It is also for the purpose of edification. It could be said in the sense that there are so many here who are already Christians that to edify is our primary import. But the primary value that we place in our worship period, in the sermons, is the desire to convict individuals of what is needed in their life. Convict them of sin, convict them of something that is missing, convict them of truth, that their souls might be saved. And so we offer an invitation at the end of every service. Every single sermon I preach. I know that there are other churches that they go through the 3 hour in the morning block like we do now. It's becoming more and more prevalent. And a lot of those congregations, and I have no problem with it, a lot of the congregations, they will just have a lesson and no invitation. And they'll just finish it with a prayer, go into the class, and then they'll have the invitation at the end of the second lesson. I can't do that. Sorry, but it rubs me the wrong way. I don't have a problem with other congregations doing it the way they do, but if I am going to proclaim the gospel of Christ, I want you to know it is designed to be an attempt to persuade you to come to the Lord. And so at the end of that lesson, I'm going to say, would you come? And that's a consequence that we have with regard to the conclusions we make. Will you obey the gospel or not? Will you obey the gospel or not today? Mark chapter 16 and verse 15, it says, go into all the world, preach the gospel to every creature, and he that believes and is baptized will be saved, but he that does not believe will be condemned. Pretty consequential, isn't it? Depending upon the path that you take. Now, we understand steadfastness continuing on. We understand that there can be second chances where a decision is not made to come, and maybe it will be made another time, but there's no guarantee of those things, is there? The writer James said, our life is but a vapor that appears for a little while and it vanishes away. And it's arrogant for us to say, I'm not going to do it today, I'll do it some other time. I'll do it some future time. Today is the day of salvation, and the choice, and if you do not choose to come forward and be baptized, or at any point in time to be baptized, you have chosen not to serve the Lord. It is consequential, and we want to note that. Second thing we'll note is, as we become Christians, are we going to live like it or not? You have to make that decision. It is a consequential decision, because no man, having put his hand to the plow and looking back, is fit for the kingdom of God. That's what apostasy is. It is important that you understand the commitment that you've made. We are told by the Apostle Paul in Romans chapter 6 and verse 1, what shall we say? Shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? Okay, we've We've received the grace of God. Our souls are saved. Now, can we just continue living the life that we lived before so that God's grace can continue to be expended upon us? And, well, Paul's answer was certainly not. How shall we who died to sin live any longer in it? Do you not know that as many of us as were baptized into Christ Jesus were baptized into His death? We're buried with Him through baptism into death, that just as Christ was raised from the dead by the glory of the Father, we also should walk in newness of life. There needs to be a considered change in our life as Christians. And so for someone to say, well, I was baptized, but I'm not a zealot about it, or it's not the most important thing, or I've got something else I need to do, or God, you can't have this part of my life, that's consequential. Because this decision that you make to become a child of God is the most important decision you'll make. And the decision to serve God as a consequence of that decision to become a child of God is equally consequential and important. Third point that we want to make. Will you pay the price? There, again, we have that idea of taking your hand from the plow. And in fact, there are a number of illustrations that are used in regard to this. I want to use the one in Luke 14, beginning verse 25. We're told that great multitudes went with Jesus. He turned and said to them, "If anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and his mother, hate his wife and his children, his brothers and his sisters, yes, and hate his own life also, he cannot be my disciple." Now that's pretty strong, isn't it? I worry about this. I worry about this with all of us. I worry about this with regard to myself. We come on Sunday. We live our lives throughout the rest of the week. And is this point of total dedication and being a person who is completely under the will and the directives of the Lord, placing His relationship with us as first, is that something that is a relevant part of our life? Because it seems to me that this text, these are the words of the Lord, indicates that that is as it should be. Whoever, we're told, verse 27, whoever does not bear his cross, come after me, he can't be my disciple. And then here we come to the idea of value. It says, "For which of you intending to build a tower does not sit down first, count the cost, if he has enough to build the tower? Lest after he's laid the foundation, not able to finish, all begin to make fun of him." You ever done that? I mean, I've seen that from time to time where there's this house that is always being worked on, but it seems to me that the owner, he's probably going to die before it ever gets the roof put on it, because he's just going a little bit at a time, and maybe he'll never have that money to build the house. What king going to make war against another king doesn't sit down first and consider, "I've got 10,000 to meet him, but he's got 20,000. And determine whether or not he can win that battle with that discrepancy before he ever takes the step against the other king. Or how about this one? While the other is a great way off, he sends the delegation and says, I'm going to ask for peace here. I don't want to lose my 10,000. I don't want to lose my victory." He says, "So likewise, whoever of you that does not forsake all that he has cannot be my disciple." It's not that he's saying he can't be as good a disciple as he needs to be. It's not saying that he can't be as mature as I would really like for him to be, or he's going to have a hard time being successful because of these things. He says he can't be my disciple. That's what God expects of each and every one of us, to count the cost. When we become children of God, that's it. That is the most important thing in our lives. The fourth one of the five we're going to look at: will you remember God while you are young? So here is something for the young people to think about. And I like to think of myself as young, but I'm not anymore. So I'll acknowledge that is the case. But recognize this: there are consequences to the life that you live right now. And there are many individuals who have lost their faith because they've put it off. There are many individuals who have determined to sow their wild oats and gotten so caught up in the consequences of that sowing that they've never been able to come to God. There are decisions that you make that only you can make. Your parents, your grandparents, your family, they want you desperately to make those decisions, but you have to make it. And if you don't, and you think to yourself that there's not going to be a harm in putting it off, you're wrong. You cannot know what's going to happen tomorrow. You cannot know how the world will treat you and how the influences of the world will impact you unless you put God first in your life while you're young. And I've talked to many older people who have come to know the Lord late in life, and almost all the time there are deep regrets for not having done it before. For being worldly for such a long period of time before they heard the gospel, or having a spouse who's a Christian but not being interested in those things until they've lost their children to the world, or having put off serving God and become successful in business, but because of that you have lost the opportunity to share the message of the gospel with so many, to do what you are supposed to do, and there are always regrets to be had in that. You remember from Ecclesiastes chapter 11, "Rejoice, O young man, in your youth. Let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart, in the sight of your eyes. But know that for all these God will bring you into judgment." Everything you do, all those things you do, even in your youth, God is going to hold you accountable for those. And so he said, "Therefore, remove sorrow from your heart. Put away evil from your flesh, because childhood and youth are vanity. Remember now your Creator in the days of your youth, before the difficult days come, when you, as the years draw nigh, say, 'I have no pleasure in them.'" You see, it's talking about the consequences. It's talking about a life that is lived. You know, I don't have time for the Lord right now because of my passions, because of my interests, because of my desires, what I want to do with my life. Some other time I'm going to settle down, and then I will have time for the Lord. He said, do it before then. Turn to God first, because doing your youth, your childhood, living your life that way is vain. It's uselessness. To you, since I'm giving this illustration to the young people, I'll give that other thing that I've mentioned time and again, the paraphrase, soap bubbles, soap bubbles. All is soap bubbles. That's what vanity is. It has some semblance of material. It's like the wind, grasping for the wind. You feel like as you're riding down the road and you had your hand out the window, you could just grab hold of that wind, but when you do, it's not there, is it? It feels like it has substance, but it's actually not substantive. That's the way it is living a life when you're young without the Lord. Oh, I'm having fun. I'm doing what I want to do. I'm sowing my wild oats. I'm involved with my friends. I'm involved with my pastimes. I'm involved with my hobbies. I'm involved with the things that really interest me now, and religion and spirituality and God. That's for older people. That's for people when you settle down. But that's not what the Bible says. And there are consequences. Not remembering God when you're young. And then finally, will you endure? Will you endure to the end? In Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 36, you have need of endurance so that after you have done the will of God, you may receive the promise. For yet a little while, and he who is coming will come. He won't tarry. Now the just shall live by faith. But if anyone draws back, my soul has no pleasure in him. I love the statement in verse 39 of the Hebrew writer there in Hebrews 10, 36 through 39. He said, speaking of himself, and I think he was saying so to the people to whom he wrote, although he had warned them about that danger. He warns them here about the danger. He warned them in Hebrews chapter 5, having need to go back to the milk of the word because they were no longer capable of imbibing in the meat. And he said, we expect better things of you. And this is where he says in verse 39, we are not of those who draw back to perdition, but of those who believe to the saving of the soul. You know what perdition is? It's ruin. It's destruction. It's utter desolation. So here we are, we are children of God, and yet as time goes on, it loses its ardor. For us, we become less zealous. We lost our first love. We have been corrupted. We've been perverted in some way. It's no longer the most important thing. Are you like that? Because that is desolation, that is ruin, that is destruction. But we are different. We're to be different. Now, verse 29 of the text indicates clearly the possibility of turning away. We're told in verse 31 of that text, it is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. But we, as Christians, we're not like that. Can you say it truly in your heart? Can you identify with his writing when he says, we're not like the ones who go back to perdition. We're like the ones who believe, not just believe, but believe to the saving of the soul. And that indicates steadfastness. It indicates that it becomes first and most important in our lives. And so as we draw our lesson to a close, using the metaphor of the roads, of the paths, of the ways, you got a choice to make, don't you? Do you want to walk as the Gentiles walk? You remember what Peter said? We spend enough of our time walking as the Gentiles walk, talking about their worldliness, their sin, their ungodliness. Or do you, as Romans 6 indicate, want to put on the new man, be risen, to be raised, to walk in newness of life? Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 17. I leave you with this passage, Ephesians 4 verse 17, going down through verse 24 of the text. This I say, therefore, and testify in the Lord, that you should no longer walk as the rest of the Gentiles walk, in the futility of their mind, having their understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in their heart, because of the blindness that is in their heart, who being past feeling, they've given themselves over to lewdness and to work uncleanness with greediness. But you have not so learned Christ. If indeed you have heard him, that you put off concerning your former conduct the old man, which grows corrupt according to the deceitful works or deceitful lusts, be renewed in the spirit of your mind, that you put on the new man, which was created according to God in true righteousness and true holiness. That's the path that God intends for us to take. And you have to ask yourself today, is that the path that you're on? And if there is something that is amiss, you know, there's two paths. There's not multiple paths. When you look at the illustration we are using to describe this, I recognize there are a lot of reasons people lose their faith. A lot of reasons people live ungodly lives. But you're on one of two roads. Either you're going to heaven or you're going to hell. And there are no other roads. You hear that said quite often by religious people. There are a lot of paths that lead to heaven. No, there's not. Jesus said, I'm the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except by me. What he's talking about is that difficult path which leads to life. It goes through Jesus Christ. And so as we offer the invitation at this time, we don't know your heart. We hope and pray that you've been touched by the thoughts that we have established today and want to make your life right with God. And so we offer that invitation, whether it be to become a child of God or to get something that is amiss in your life made right. If you need some encouragement, you need some help, whatever it may be. The invitation is extended to you at this time, and we hope and pray you'll take advantage of it by coming forward now while together we stand, while we sing.